page 370, we're going to start Pasuk Tezayin, because there's certain, we learned it already, but there's a few things that we didn't mention, discuss, and they're very important, interesting, whatever. So in Pasuk Tezayin of Perek Yudalad, the Pasuk says, okay, in the previous Pasuk Tezvav, Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, why are you crying to me? Don't cry, just start moving, go into the Yamsuf. Now the story is, again, the Egyptians are behind the Jews, the water's in front of them, the Jews are at a dilemma what to do. Moshe Rabbeinu says, they start davening to Hashem, Hashem says, you know, cool it, chill out, don't, just be quiet. Now in Pasuk Tezayin, it says, V'ato horim mitzmatcha, lift up the stick, and put your hand over the ocean of Koeo and split it. And the Jews will come into the ocean by Yabosh, into the dry land. Now, last time we started discussing, we didn't get into the details of this though. Harim Mismatcha literally means lift up your staff and put your hand over the Yam. So it's like, what did he use? Did he use the stick or did he use the hand? What did he do? So we learned the Mefarshim explain that Harim Mismatcha actually means take away your stick. Don't use the stick. You should only use your hand. So we learned last time that why did Hashem tell Moshe Rabbeinu to use the hand instead of the stick? That people shouldn't say the stick, the staff that Moshe Rabbeinu had, was only problematic. It caused plagues. It caused problems. It didn't cause saving for the Jews. It didn't cause the Jews to be saved. So the simple meaning is Hashem said, you know what? Show that the stick didn't do the miracles. I mean, the Jews were going to say the stick did all the miracles. And so it was a special stick. It's not Moshe, it's not God. The stick did the miracles. So Hashem said to Moshe Rabbeinu, you know what, take away the stick and use your hand. But the Kli Yakar explains it interestingly deeper. Why Taka did Hashem say use your hand rather than the stick? In Egypt, we say in the Haggadah that whatever happened in Egypt, five times the amount happened at the crossing of the sea. Like one opinion says, there were 10 plagues in Egypt, 50 plagues at the sea. 40 plagues, 200. 50 plagues, 250. Whatever it was in Egypt was only a fifth of what happened by the Yamsuf. So it says, why is that? Because in Egypt, page 370, in Egypt, the people said, Etzba alakim hi, it's the finger of God. And by Kriyas Yamsuf, it says, Vayar Yisrael es hayada gedoyla, they saw the big hand. So therefore, the Haggadah says, from the Gemara, that what happened at the Yamsuf was five times, because a hand is five fingers, and this is one finger. So all the plagues that happened in Egypt were one finger, and then the Yamsuf was a hand. So the Kli Yakar explains that's the difference between a staff and a hand. A stick looks like one finger. So in Egypt, when it was Etzba Elokim Hi, it was the finger of God, Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu to use the stick. When it came by the Yamsuf, which is five times the amount, so Hashem says, now I want you to use your hand. Because this is going to be five times the miracles of what happened in Egypt. So the Kli Yakar explains that's why Hashem wanted to say that he should use not the staff, but rather he should use the actual hand itself. Moshe Rabbeinu stuck out his hand, and then the Jews went into the Yam. When the guy jumped into the water, we didn't get there, but when the guy jumped into the water, the water did not split until the water came up there.
I know that, but which came first, him jumping or Moshe
Rabbeinu put out his hand.
I'm sorry,
Moshe Rabbeinu put out his hand first, and then the guy jumped.
So what was the great miracle?
Because when Moshe Rabbeinu put out his hand, the sea didn't split yet. The sea didn't split until the guy jumped in and was almost drowning. That's when it split. So that was his Mesiras Nefesh. Because the Jews needed that act of self-sacrifice to allow them to split the sea, which was a preparation for the receiving of the Torah. When we get more into the next few psukim, maybe even tonight, this whole story of the plagues in Egypt, the splitting of the sea, you know, this whole thing was a sequence of events that was a preparation for the Torah to be given. In order for Torah to be given, there had to be Kriyas Yamsuf. The splitting of the sea had to happen for Matan Torah to take place. And Kriyas Yamsuf was not only to save the Jews, that they shouldn't be killed by the Egyptians. Hashem had many, many different ways of saving the Jewish people.
Would this biome have merit?
That's what I'm saying. The Jews needed the Mesiris Nefesh of Nachshon Ben Aminadav to jump into the water, which caused the sea to split, which allowed the Jews as a form of preparation for the receiving of the Torah. So they needed that jumping, that Mesiris Nefesh. So if the sea split and the Jews just walked in, we wouldn't have that value, that level of self-sacrifice. So it had to be that way. Okay, so he says in Pasuk Yud-Zayin, I'm going to harden the heart of Pare. Not only before did Hashem say, I'm going to harden his heart that he chased you, but Hashem says, I'm going to harden his heart. They're going to come after you. And I'm going to make it heavy in Pare and in all his armies. Okay, here it says, I will give honor. Not heavy, but rather I will become honored. Through Pari and through his entire enemy, through his chariots and through his horses. Meaning, as we know, as we'll learn later in Naz Yashir, that all the nations of Canaan were in awe from the miracle that happened at Kriyas Yamsuf. So everybody in the world saw the miracle, and God became glorified through the splitting of the sea, and by Pari being killed in the Yamsuf. And we'll learn later, not only did the sea split, but every water in the world split. A guy was drinking a cup of water, it split. Not the glass, the water split. The only river that didn't split at the time of Kriyas Yamsuf, the Medrash says, was Nahar Pros, the Euphrates. Because it says that when Mashiach comes, God is going to split the Euphrates. So,
where is that?
Euphrates is one of the biblical boundaries of Eretz Yisrael. Euphrates, yeah? Nahar Pros.
We have Mediterranean, we have the Red Sea.
Yeah, but Euphrates is a river. I don't know where it is in the map.
Iraq, isn't it?
East of here, yeah. It's on the east side.
Back east.
Iran, next to Tehran. Okay. So he says, Hashem says, I will become glorified by what's going on. The Yodim Mitzrayim in Egypt will know, Ki ani Hashem, that I am God. Bikavdi Befari, when I sanctify myself through Pare, Berich Be'yavafarash, again, the Pasuk is saying that I'm going to become famous and glorified by this. Now, obviously, the Venezer Ebrites, like so to speak, asks, who is going to be glorified if all the Egyptians are going to be drowning? So obviously, not all the Egyptians chased the Jews. Pharaoh took his army, but the other Egyptians were home. So he was glorified in all of Egypt and everything. Okay, so now the Pasuk says, Vayisa Malacho Alekim, the angel of God traveled, Ha'helech Lefnei Machni Yisrael, that normally traveled in front of the Jews, and he went behind them. Normally the Jews were led by an angel to show them the way. Now this angel, instead of going to the front, went to the back to separate between the Jews and Egypt. The Egyptians were behind them. And the Mefarshim explain that normally it says in Chumash the expression Malach Hashem. Normally the Pasuk always says, Malach Hashem, the angel of God.
They were able to see the angel? Leading him forward? Moshe was able to see him.
No, the fact was, there was this angel there. And the Jews were able to actually live in the city. Yeah. Akhriyas Yamzev was a great revelations of godliness. Now, the Mefarshim explain, why does it say Malach Alakim, if normally it says Malach Hashem? Because, as we will learn in the next few psukim, at the time of Akhriyas Yamzev, the Jews were judged. Because the angels came along to God and said, I don't understand, why are you saving the Egyptians? I mean, why are you saving the Jews, not the Egyptians? Halalo evde avedazara, valalo evde avedazara. He said, they're both worshipping idols. So why in the world are you saving the Jews better than the Egyptians? So because the Jews were being judged at this time, it uses the word malach elokim, because elokim is the attribute of judgment, because it wants to tell us that the Jews were also being judged at this time. This is what? What's your first question? In order to have a next question, you need a first one.
He asked it already.
Oh.
He asked my first question.
Okay, good.
After the man was drowning up to here, what came first? They saw the angels?
So, the Ibn Ezra writes, this pasuk of out of place. Because he says, this pasuk that the angel went back, was, he says, this pasuk is before the pasuk that said before, tell the Jews to go move, to journey on. Because once the Jews journeyed on, the malach was already behind them. So this pasuk is out of order, as many psukim and chumash. Yeah. It's an excellent question. I can imagine what your third question is going to be. Now, the Ramban quotes the Ibn Ezra that says that this malach, which malach are we talking about? Because in the next pasuk it's going to say about the cloud. Okay? The cloud that used to go in front of the Jews now went behind the Jews. And this malach is the malach of that cloud. So it's not like two different things. The malach was the angel of that cloud that normally traveled in front of the Jews in the desert, and now he went behind them.
Playing it safe.
Playing it safe, yeah. He didn't tell me his name. I don't know. Okay. So he said, V'yitzah malach olikim ha'elach tafni machni yisrael. The malach that normally went in front, the malach that went normally in front of them went behind them. And it says, why, Rashi says, why did the malach go behind them? Not only to separate between the Jews and the Egyptians, but the Egyptians were throwing arrows at the Jews, shooting arrows and spears and everything. And the malach was catching it, that it shouldn't touch the Jew. Okay. Vayisa amud onam mipneihem, and the cloud of glory went from before them. Normally when it went before them, vayamid me'achareim, it went behind them. Now, when it became dark and the pillar of fire came, so the cloud didn't leave, it went behind them. Meaning as follows. When the Jews traveled for the 40 years in the desert, the pasuk says later on in Chumash, that during the day the Jews had a cloud. Then at night, they had a column of fire to give light. It was a lit up stadium where the Jews were. So normally it says, meaning that before the cloud left, the fire came. Before the fire left in the morning, the cloud already came. But once one came, the other one left. Here Rashi explains what happened was, the cloud that went in front of the Jews during the day, when the pillar of fire came, it didn't leave, but it rather went behind the Jews. So the night of Kriyas Yamsuf, they had the pillar of fire, plus the cloud. They had both. To protect them from the Egyptians. Vayisa amud anam mipneim vayamid machareim. Okay. Then it says, Vayavi bin machane mitzrayim. He came between the camps of the Egyptians. Uvei machane yisom between the Jewish camp. Vayi anan vacheshech, who was the cloud in the darkness. Vayoyes alayla, and it lit up the night. And it says, the Jews and the Egyptians did not come close to one another the entire night. That's the simple meaning of the pasuk. So the pasuk means that there was a space in between the two camps. The cloud came, the angel came, or the same thing, if you learn according to those mefarshim, that it was the angel of the cloud. They stood between the two camps. And Vayara Salayla, like it says, it actually lit up the night. Okay?
The cloud lit up the night?
Yes. That's what the simple meaning of the pasuk implies. Well, it said Vayara Salayla, implying that it was actually the cloud itself lit up the night. Yeah, right. The white ones. They didn't come to next to each other the entire night. The world has an expression, you know, when you hack a chinik a whole night, and you know, you just sit and talk to him, telling that one thing has no connection to the next. So it's if you talk things that have no clap, no connection one to the next, kalalaila, you can talk a whole night. Now, so you talk, you know, shtusim, you can talk a whole night, there's no problem. What? During the day, you got to work. Yeah, it depends. You're right, you could talk a whole day and all night. Okay. The Yait. Okay, why does he... Okay. There's, if you look back in Pasuk Tezayin, I don't know why he says it's in the wrong place. If you look in Pasuk Tezayin that we started today, the pasuk says, "Ve'yaveil b'nei Yisrael b'seich hayom." They went into the ocean by Yabosh in the dry land. Later on, in pasuk, it says, "V'nei Yisrael hochu by Yabosh b'seich hayom." One second, hochu by Yabosh b'seich hayom. Here. In Pasuk Choftes, it says, "Ubnei Yisrael hochu bayabasha b'seich hayam." Here it says, first they went b'teich hayam bayabasha. In Pasuk 16, if you know, it's even in the English. In 16 it says, the Jews shall come into the midst of the sea on dry land. In Pasuk Choftes, it says they went in dry land in the midst of the sea. Here it says yam first and then dry land. And over there it says the dry land first and then the ocean. So the question is, which one is it? So the Kalyaka explains a very interesting concept. There were different levels of Jews. There are the believing Jews. And then he calls them like the Noyach Jews. The Noyach, Rashi says before in Chumash, was a very small believer. Even Noach didn't go into the ark until the rain came down. Even though God said to Noach, go into the ark, the rain is coming, he didn't believe it. Until when it started pouring, then he went into the ark. He saw God meant business. Hashem told the Jews, go. Okay? So the believing Jews jumped. They went b'seich hayam. They went into the yam that became yabasha, that became dry. Then there were Jews that said, hey, let's see what's going on. I don't want to get wet. When it dries up, then we'll go in. So that was the yabasha b'seich hayam. That was the pasuk saying they went into the dry land in the midst of the sea. But the believing Jews, they went b'teich hayam. They jumped into the sea. And it became yabash, it became dry land. Well, some people say Binyamin, the tribe of Binyamin jumped. Some people say, you know, Nachshon ben Aminadav. Whoever it was, Nachshon ben Aminadav was the first. But it could be right away, you know, following other people there too. But the difference is if they believed or they didn't believe. The people who believed got to jump. They said, how high? The other Jews said, let's wait and play out the scenario and see what happens over here. And then we'll decide what to do. Okay. Yeah. Was it overlooking a cliff? I don't know. But regardless, he just jumped into the water.
Since the water is so shallow, why would he be jumping in the water?
No, I mean, because when you keep on saying jump, I give you this.
It says in the Gemara the expression kofatz that he jumped. Maybe they're up on a cliff. Yeah, I know, you could walk into the water and it's not deep.
The water coming up, that means it must have been pretty deep. It must have been very shallow. Then it's
well, the scientists that don't believe in miracles say it was a low tide.
Yeah, I saw that.
I don't know if they're on a cliff or not. I don't know. But the expression in Chazal is that he jumped. I mean, he jumped. Okay, so what happened is, I went too far. I went to Pesach of Tess. Okay. Vayet Meshes Yodei Aliyam. So Meshe Rabbeinu put his hand, like Hashem told him, over the sea. Vayelach Hashem Asayam. And God led the sea. Beruach Kodim Azah Kol HaLayla, with a very strong eastern wind. Because the Rashi says it's the strongest of all winds is the eastern wind that Hashem punishes the Rishoyim with. And he made the ocean into dry. And the water split. So the obvious question is, if the Pasuk already says that the water became dry, why does the Torah have to say that the water split? So Rashi says, from the Medrash, it teaches us that every water in the world split. So two things happened. The Yam Suf became dry. And secondly, all the water in the world actually split at that time. What? Now, okay, the next pasuk. Vayavel bnei Yisrael b'secha yam b'yabasha. The Jews went into the yam b'yabasha. And here again, here it also says, they went into the yam, into the dry land. V'amayim lehem chayma, and the water became a wall for them. Miminam u'mismelem, on the right side and on the left side. Now, meaning, it didn't spill to the sides. The water actually stood up like a wall, and we'll soon see what the significance of that is. Now, according to other Mefarshim, what does it mean? B'seich hayom b'yabasha. What do you mean, into the sea and the dry land? So Rashi, the Erechaim explains, Teich hayam means into the essence of the sea, and it was completely dry. Meaning, normally, when you have water and you move over the water, the bottom is still muddy. Here the miracle was, by Abasha, it was completely dry. So in the essence of the sea, the water became dry completely. That's the way the Arachayim learns. Now, what is this thing of the water becoming a wall on the right side and on the left side? There's a hole in over here, we might as well discuss this whole Megillah together, so to speak. The point over here is, the Jews at this time were being judged. The angel said, the angel of Mitzrayim said, the Jews are not any better than the Goyim. They're also worshipping idols. Why are you saving them? So it says, they merited for two mitzvahs that they're going to be getting. V'amayim lohem chayma. Chayma means a wall. A wall is a form of protection. What was the protection that the Jews were going to have? Miminam u'mismelam, Torah, which was given in the right hand of God. Miminay esh daslami. The pasuk says in Zayis Abracha, the Torah was given from the right hand of God, came a fiery law. And smelam is the mitzvah of tefillin. Other places says the concept of tefillah. Meaning, at that time that the Jews were being judged, Hashem said, the Jews are going to be saved because they're going to receive the Torah, which was given on the right side, Therefore, it was a wall on the right, and the left side was the protection of tefillin. Or, like we said, other opinions say davening. So the Jews needed the future merits, at least, to be able to save them from the entire concept of Kriyas Yamsuf. No, it depends, good or bad. If a person will be bad in the future, Hashem judges them for the good now, like it says, Vayishmael Akim is Kulanat. When it's speaking about now they're bad, but in the future they'll be good, Hashem looks at the good. Hashem will always judge them on the good. Give them the benefit of the doubt either way. If they're good now, or if they'll be good later, Hashem will judge them. Now, what happened over here at Kriyas Yamsuf? So we learned already Shvi'i Shel Pesach nights when we discussed this, and Shvi'i Shel Pesach, when the Jews went into the sea, according to Tosfos, the Medrash says they didn't go through the sea. They didn't cross from one side to the next. The Jews went into the water, made a U-turn, and came back on the same side. Okay? Tosfos in Erchin quotes the Medrash that said, Ba'esi tzad sheyardu, ba'esi tzad alu. The side they went down into the water, that was the side they came out of the water. Which means they basically went into the water, made a U-turn, and came back. So the question is, why is that? Yeah.
So they could see the Egyptians dying.
It could be they jumped off the cliff. And then they went in, they made a U-turn, and then they didn't have to go off the cliff anymore.
Jump off the cliff, it's right there in the water.
Yeah, they you know what it is to make a tractor-trailer U-turn? Takes up a lot of space. You're talking about the big 18-wheelers, yeah. Each Jew had 10 donkeys, so is it each had 4 feet per donkey, 40-wheel tractor-trailers they had. To make U-turns.
You call U-turn
as parsa? Parsa is a U-turn?
Yep.
Maybe in Hebrew, not...
Why they have to even make it there? Why couldn't they?
So why did they do it?
So why did they do it? Okay, so basically, what's going on over here?
A horseshoe.
Okay. Yeah. So basically, the question is, if Hashem wanted to save the Jews and kill the Egyptians, as it says, Hashem has habid rachum lamokim. The Gemara has an expression. Hashem could do it many different ways. He could have made an earthquake to swallow, like Korach, right? It swallowed up all the Egyptians. Hashem could have made a mountain come down on their heads and kill them all. I mean, there's so many ways that Hashem could have killed the Egyptians. What is this concept that they have to go into the sea? They have to jump into the sea. They have to make a U-turn. The sea has to split. They have to walk on the dry land. And there has to be walls. And according to certain opinions in the Medrash, it wasn't like the sea split and all the Jews went. Every tribe had their own tunnel. That means the waters were 12 divisions of waters. Plus the Eid of Rav, which was even more. So they had many tunnels of the Jews going in, and they're going in, and they make a U-turn, and meanwhile the Egyptians are coming in, and all of a sudden after all the Egyptians are in and the Jews are out, the water comes back and drowns them all. So obviously it's a very strange thing. So here's where Chassidus comes in and gives a in-depth explanation of what's going on over here. In godliness, there's what two worlds. You know, in davening, sometimes we say, min ha'olam vada ha'olam. From world to world. What do you mean from world to world? There are what's called Almedias Galia. There are revealed worlds of godliness. And there are hidden worlds of godliness. Meaning, there are levels of godliness which are revealed. There are levels of godliness which are not revealed. In practical language, these two levels are called Yam and Yabosha. The Gemara says, everything that exists on the dry land exists in the sea. Everything that exists in the sea exists in dry land. Because we know more than half the world is covered with water. So you're basically dealing with 50-50 land and water. So in the ocean, there's tons and tons of creations. Whatever you'll find in dry land, you will find in the ocean. What's the difference between the dry land and the ocean? As Rambam quotes the pasuk, "Kamayim layom achasim." When you look at the ocean, all you see is water. Everything that's in the water, the fish, the octopuses, the sharks, the whales, everything is hidden in the water. On dry land, everything is revealed. That's the difference between Yam and Yabasha, because basically, they both have the same stuff. Yam is where you don't see it, and Yabasha is where you do see it. What happened to Kriyas Yamsuf? Kriyas Yamsuf is Yam became Yabasha. What does it mean, Yam became Yabasha? All the hidden revelations of godliness, all the hidden levels of God, became revealed. The ocean became dry land. To the extent that even the little kids, in the middle of Vaz Yashu, we say, Zeh Keli Van Veil, this is my God. This means you're able to point and say, this is my God. It means it's close to you, you're able to point. It's not somewhere distant. What actually happened in Kriyas Yamsuf, and this is why it had to be a preparation for Matan Torah, and in order for this to happen, you needed this so-called Meshuganer, Nachshim and Aminadav, that jumped with Mesidas Nefesh. You need that because in order for the Jews to receive the Torah, which was a revelation of Anechi Hashem Elokecha, I am God, your God, which was the greatest revelation besides the revelation of Mashiach, which will be greater than Matan Torah. Matan Torah was the greatest revelation of godliness that ever existed and ever will exist until Mashiach. So basically, in order to prepare themselves to reach that level of being able to receive the Torah, there had to be a revelation of godliness, that all the hidden levels of godliness that are never ever revealed, which called Yam, they became Yabasha. In order for that concept to happen, meaning to create an opposite nature, that Yam becomes Yabasha, that hidden becomes revealed, which is basically the opposite of its nature. Its nature is to be concealed. And now you want to reveal that level of concealment, you need to have Mesidas Nefesh, which is going against your nature, because Mesidas Nefesh means giving up your will, meaning giving up your nature, not even talking about killing yourself. Killing yourself for sure. You're giving up, a person wants to live. To give up your life is against your nature. In order for Kriyas Yamsuf to take place, they needed a Nachshim and Aminadav that represented the Jewish nation to be able to jump into the ocean. His Mesidas Nefesh caused the revelation of godliness, that every hidden level of godliness became revealed. That even they said, Zeh Keli, the level of, the deepest levels of godliness were Zeh revealed. And that had to be a preparation to Matan Torah. Without Kriyas Yamsuf, Matan Torah couldn't have happened. So it wasn't only the point, like you learn the Pasuk simply, and if you watch the movie, whatever, that what happened by Kriyas Yamsuf was, Hashem had to save the Jews. And how did Hashem save the Jews? By doing this Yamsuf stunt. That's not at all what it's all about. And therefore, there was no need for the Jews to cross the Yam. They went into the Yam. They went into the secrets. The secrets became Yabasha. It became revealed. And then that's what the Jews needed. The Hashem to reveal himself in a revealed way. And that's what Kriyas Yamsuf was all about. So in order for that to happen, the Jews needed merits of Torah and Tefillin, or Torah and Tefillah, for those two things to happen.
And they forgot about it
40
days later.
Forgot about it 40 days later.
It's a constant miracle.
Why did they forget about it? It's a very simple thing. It didn't permeate them. It was superficial. It was a hoo-ha, you know, revelation. It didn't become internalized.
It wasn't like for a little while, it was for days.
What?
So many days of travel, like constant miracles, one after another.
But they didn't internalize it.
After so many days?
Yep.
Rabbi, know the answer may be because the ocean was too wide, but why couldn't they just go in one end and go out the other? Why did they have to do
that? Because obviously the trip and the journey that eventually ended up in the desert had to be on this side. Yeah, this is all, everything that happened to the Jews is part of the big plan. You know, we think, oh, this messed it up, so okay, so I gotta go to MapQuest again, I made the wrong turn, and I gotta go and redo the route. This is all part of the master plan. Hashem had this all in mind when as things were happening.
Do we know how many days it took him to go in and out of the...
One day.
24 hours?
Less.
One night.
Less than a few hours.
Less than a few hours?
Yeah.
600,000 people?
They were running.
And their donkeys?
Donkeys took their time.
600,000 men. Without women and children.
Oh, yeah.
Some about 3 million people. Yeah, but they didn't have to get dressed and put up the makeup, so it took less. So it took them less. They were able to... No, but it's 3 million people.
They say what day of the week it was?
No, it's very simple. The Jews left Egypt on Thursday. Right? Thursday, Friday, Shabbos, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. It happened on Wednesday. Tuesday night late. No, by Shmeisa Bake, it happened in the last part of the last third of the night. This whole Kriyas Yamsev took place. Tuesday night.
Between Tuesday and Wednesday.
Between Tuesday night and Wednesday morning it happened.
Why did it happen at night?
All action happens at night.
Special effects.
What time at night?
Because what happened is, as it says over here in the Pasuk again, Vayoyer es halayla, the night became illuminated. Again, night, darkness, concealment, became day, became revelation. No, the night is divided into three parts. Three Ashmedas is called. The night is 12 hours. Okay? Each third is 4 hours. This happened in the last 4 hours of the night. Let's say from 2 to 6. They had heaters.
To go Red Sea, go all the way across the Red Sea and come back.
Oh, and the splitting is possible.
No,
what makes sense over here?
The fact that the people went, see, travel 6 days, everything. Now, to make a U-turn, if you do by mileage wise, it's not possible. You know
right.
What I mean? I mean, you go.
Right.
Yeah.
Depending
so.
how far it is.
Possible?
No, but you know what? One second. The Or HaChaim does ask on later Pesukim when it says there was Bashmer Sebeker. He said, why did Hashem do that's a great thing? Why didn't he do it in the morning? I'm sorry, why did he do it Bashmer Sebeker, which was when the Jews went in the last part of the night. The Egyptians went in the first part of the morning. He said, why didn't he do it at night? Because night is a time of punishment, so Hashem should have punished the person at night. You know that a person during the day is a revelation of chesed. At night is a revelation of gevura. Do you know it's interesting? When the people are sick, do you know you always feel worse at night than you do during the day? When you're sick, you feel worse at night than you do during the day. So it says, why is that? So science, you'll ask the doctors. But according to Kabbalah, it's because day is chesed and night is gevura. And if night is gevura, which is strictness, you feel worse at night than you do during the day. That's what it says in Svarim. Night is Gvura. So, one minute. So, the Chaim asks, why did Hashem drown the Egyptian Bashmer Sebek? Why didn't he do it at night? And he said, Taka, that's what Gavriel said, and the angel Gavriel said, and Hashem said, wait, and, you know, like it says, Vayashkim Avram Babaiker. Hashem woke up in the, I mean, Avram woke up in the morning, so I'm going to reward them in the morning. What? No questions. Okay. Vayid Pasachov Gimel. Vayid from Mitzrayim, the Egyptians chased them. Vayavar Achrem, they came after them. Kolsus Par, all the horses of Parir. Vayavarosh of the chariots and the riders. Al Teichayam. They started chasing the Jews into the yam. Vehi bashmeres habeikir, and it was bashmeres habeikir. It was in the first part of the day, in the morning watch, as it's called. Hashem vayashkev Hashem amachni Mitzrayim. God looked down at the camp of Egypt, and the Gemara says whenever it says the word vayashkev, you find it by Zdeim also. Anytime it says vayashkev hashkifa is bad, except in Parshas Kisavei by Bikurim it says hashkifa memein kachcham in Hashemayim, look down from your dwelling place, and the Gemara says that every time it says vayashkev hashkifa, that is bad. Like over here, God destroyed by Zdeim, God destroyed. And over there, because the mitzvah of tzedakah makes the word vayashkev, which is bad, into hashkifa, which is good. And therefore, you know, if you're laying the Torah, that pasuk, the Balkari reads louder, hashkifa mein kachcha, because it's like a good sign. So what happened? Hashem looked down at the camp of Egypt with a pillar of fire. No, it's always negative except hashkifa. Says Hashem looked down, Bamut Eish va'anan, with the pillar of fire in the cloud, Vayoham, and he confounded, he famished, he made him all nuts. Esmachna Mitzrayim, they all became crazy, they became all mixed up, because everything in the water started coming back, and the axle split, and everything was going on over here. Now, there's a pasuk before that we're still in the middle of. Pasuk Chaf Aleph at the end, it says, "Vayasim esayom lacharava." Hashem made the dry land, the ocean dry, and then it says, "Vayibaku amayim," the water split. The order is wrong. First, it should say the water split, and then Hashem made it dry. Right? So that's where Rashi says one of the reasons Rashi says that all the waters of the world split. But the Klayok answers a different answer. He says there was an underground wind that dried the ocean bottom before the water split. He said first the land became dry and then it split. And other Mepharshim learn, like the Malbim learns, two things happen over here. First, Hashem made the water split and everything was muddy. And then Hashem made a miracle that it all became immediately dry. Mamish like a paved road for the Jews to walk on or drive on, whatever. Now we're on Pasuk Chaf Hei. Vayasar, and Hashem removed Eifim Akvesa, the wheels of the chariots. In other words, when they're driving the wagons, Hashem took off, made the wheels fall off. So now they're trying to go with the horses to lead them, and it was very difficult. He made him drive it with great difficulty. And the Egyptian said, "Anusa mipnei Yisrael, let me run away from the Jews, ki Hashem nilcham lahem b'Mitzrayim, because God is fighting for them in Egypt." So the question is, what does it mean God is fighting for them in Egypt? So simply it means the nation of Egypt. But it says in the Medrash, and Rashi quotes it, that just like the people on the sea, the Egyptians were punished, all the Egyptians that were home in Egypt were also punished simultaneously. How? Doesn't say how. Just Hashem punished them also.
Before you're saying that they glorified Hashem.
So right.
They punished them and there's nobody left. So
he didn't kill them, he punished them.
Oh.
The people that chased the Jews to the ocean, they were all killed, except one. Power. That's it.
Ramses.
Huh?
Ramses the third.
You mean the in the English name? I don't know. By the way, the Alter Rebbe in Shai Yuchad V'Amuna, in the second part of Tanya, uses this whole concept of Kriyas Yamsuf to prove a fundamental point in Chassidus of divine providence and continuous creation. Because we learned now that Hashem made the eastern wind that held the water up. And then in the next few psukim we're going to learn, Hashem said to Moshe, okay, put out your hand again. And the eastern wind left, and all the water came crushing back all the way on the Egyptians. Mamash came crushing back on the Egyptians. In fact, the Gemara asks an interesting question. How high did the water go up? So one opinion in the Gemara says 12 mil. A mil is a Persian mile. A mil is 2,000 amis. Let's say 4,000 feet. It went 48,000 feet up, which was the size of the Jewish camp. Which is the size. The Jewish camp in the Midbar took up 12 mil by 12 mil. A mil is 2,000 amis. Okay, let's see the smaller amount, 3,000 feet. So this is 36,000 feet up it went. And the other opinion says you can't say that because when the water comes crashing down, the water is going to go quicker than people and it's going to drown out all the people, all the Jews. So therefore they learned it didn't go up 36,000 feet. It went up miles and miles and miles that the whole nation of Canaan saw the water going up. But he basically took away all the water and put it up. Now, how did Hashem get the water back? He undid the Ruach Kadim. He took away the eastern wind. So what do you see from there? Alter Rebbe says that in order for the water to stand, you need a continuous power in the water keeping it standing. Because the second Hashem took away the wind, the water came crushing down. Why? Because the nature of water is to flow. If you want to change the nature of the water, so you need a constant power in it. Like we learned, if you want to get water to stand, you need to build a dam in the water. When you build a dam in the water, the dam could be there for hundreds of years, thousands of years, and the water will stop. The second you would take away the wall, the water will go back as if there was never a dam there. Which means, when you want to change the nature of something, you need to have a constant power in it, keeping it changed. The second you take away the power, it goes back to what its original nature is. So the Alter Rebbe says, when Hashem created the world, before Hashem created the world, there was nothing. So the nature of the world is to be nothing. So in order to keep the world something, you need a continuous power of Hashem keeping the world going, because if Hashem's power would leave for a second, the world would become nothing again. But
how did God put the water back? You, Moshe?
Next pasuk is going to say, he told Moshe, put your hand and it's going to go back. He did what God told him to do, man.
But why would God?
By the eagle, Moshe Rabbeinu went around killing people after the Jews worshipped the eagle. Hashem said, go kill people. Moshe Rabbeinu went and killed people. If a judge kills somebody, are they a murderer?
No.
Why not?
Because he probably deserves to die.
That's not the reason. He's not a murderer because God said kill him. No?
My question is, it's just kind of surprising, because all you hear from Moshe is, you know, doing chesed.
Right.
I'm just surprised, it's kind of surprising that...
Getting rid of Egyptians is chesed.
True.
So. Huh? No, it's true.
Whatever happened to all the animals in the sea?
They all died. In fact, the Medrash says that the Jews said, the Jews complain no matter what. We know that. They wouldn't be Jewish if not. The Jews said, you know, we don't understand. Just like we came out on this side, maybe the Egyptians came out on the other side. Right? The Jews had a legitimate thing. They said, "What? How do we know the Egyptians died? We came out, so maybe they came out on the other side." So Hashem, and not only that, it says there was a fight between the ocean and the dry land. Nobody wanted the Egyptians. So they were fighting. The ocean said, I don't want him. The ocean wanted to spit him out. The land said, no, we don't want him. You keep him. So Hashem said, when the Jews complained that how do we know that the Egyptians were taka killed? So it says Hashem told the ocean, spit them out, and the ocean threw all the bodies on the dry land, and that's why it says later that the Jews saw Vayayisos Mitzrayim Meisel Svasayom. They saw the Egyptians die on the seashore. Why? Because the ocean took and spit them out.
But fish wanted the Egyptians to eat.
They didn't.
Back then, the Jews didn't have Torah. They weren't keeping Mitzvah or anything. God did such a great miracle for them to save them. Why can't he do the same thing with the Palestinians today? And there are more Jews today keeping Torah and Mitzvah.
Why do parents do things for infants that they wouldn't do when they get older? Why not? You know, for infants, your parents will feed you and they'll diaper you. Oh, so the Jews now were in infancy. They were just born when they left Egypt. So Hashem says, now you're babies, I'm going to take care of all your needs. I'm not going to make you go to work. I'm not going to make you pay rent. I'm going to take care of all your needs. So the Jews were in the infancy stage. Now, exactly what you're saying. Hashem took care of all the needs. After we grew up, God says, now kids, go stand on your own feet. What do you think? I'm going to diaper you for the rest of your life and feed you? Stand on your own feet. That's what it is, really.
Drive Alexa.
Huh? It's the best answer. It's a simple, logical answer. That's why God did all the miracles in those days. That's number one. Number two, which is more primary than this, this is a whatever answer. But the real answer is because Hashem doesn't do it to us now, because now we need more Mercedes Nefesh, because right before the coming of Mashiach, just like Bekriyas Yamsuf, in order for Kriyas Yamsuf to happen, you needed Menachem and Aminadav to jump. So when it comes right before Mashiach, we need Mesiras Nefesh. And if we would see all the miracles of Hashem, and Hashem would do all the miracles for us, we would not be having the Mesiras Nefesh that is demanded for Mashiach to be able to come. And therefore Hashem says, I am not revealing myself to you, because then it's not Mesiras Nefesh. If you see God, and you do, and you keep mitzvahs, of course, you see God, why shouldn't you keep mitzvahs? So Hashem says, you know what? I want the Palestinians to be strong. I want the Jews to be suffering. I want the Jews. This is all part of the game, of the plan, that we should have Mesiras Nefesh, that the Eibishter should self-sacrifice to bring Mashiach.
When you have here, it's so, it's almost like you could make a cartoon out of it.
They can make a movie, and they did, by the way.
But it's like a cartoon. I mean, to our intelligence, the guy dies, throw him out in the sea, and the sea go 40,000 feet out. It's almost like you could make a cartoon out of it. You know, there's no, nothing like this has happened since. Nothing like that has happened since then.
But this is the miracle of Kriyas Yamsuf. This is exactly what happened.
I'm not saying it didn't got covered. I'm just saying in our, at least in my intelligence.
Because in our world we don't see it, because Hashem says you need to have Mesiras Nefesh. Okay.